Welcome to Limitless Live. I am your host, Michael Gustin. I'm excited to be with you today. This podcast is for those who are high achievers, high aspirers, the dreamers who want to achieve more, do more, while experiencing a lot more peace, a lot more zen, and a lot more ease. Change the world and feel good doing it. Excited to have you with us today.
Awesome, 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 awesome. All right, welcome to Limitless Live podcast with Michael and Jen. It's an amazing day. It's Monday. It's August 15th. If you have kids, they're probably going back to school. If you don't have kids, be grateful you're not taking them back to school. It is an amazing, amazing time of year. Everybody is more active than ever. And of course, as a result, we are definitely more stressed than ever, finding ourselves wanting to take big leaps, take massive jumps, take big risks. And in a lot of ways, you know, I condone those. I advocate for people taking big risks. But, you know, one thing I don't advocate for is trying to get 10 steps ahead of the next step before you even take the next step and land there safely and solidly, which leads us into today's episode talking about the power of incremental, consistent, and steady growth. Jen, how are you doing this morning?
I'm so good, Michael. I'm so happy to be here. Always inspired and stoked by our conversations.
I am too. I am too. It's amazing how we get to have conversations off camera and then on camera and see how those things translate. For those of you who don't know, Jen is the executive director of coaches at Reality Hacker, really spearheading our coaching mission, our purpose, everything that has to do with taking folks to the next level. She's involved in. Jen is the owner of Schmidt's House of Jambalaya, one of the greatest jambalaya restaurants on the planet in Crescent City. If you guys have not visited it and been to Crescent City, California, make sure to go there. But it wasn't always the fantastic state-winning award, nation award-winning success story that it is. Right, Jen?
No, we started as a pop-up food tent, as a weekend hobby.
Wow. Tell me more.
Really?
I don't know. Right. I've heard this story.
Yeah. So Michael, my husband, wow, the story could get really long because I'm a talker. So I will keep it short and succinct. Michael loves Cajun and Creole food. He learned how to make Cajun and Creole, you know, essence from a chef who had been a famous chef in New Orleans. And Michael, you know, after learning that, created his own recipe for jambalaya. And when we got together, he always had this idea, he's also a musician, to fund a CD production, an album production, by doing a pop-up food tent selling the jambalaya. And he had had that idea for a while, but then I came along and I'm always like, heck yeah, let's go. So I said, heck yeah, let's go. And we did. And we started doing pop-up, you know, food vending at music festivals outside of Philadelphia and street fairs and things. And at the time we had a toddler. No, we had an infant. So our daughter was just born. And this grew and grew. And it was so much fun. And we were doing it weekend warrior style because Michael worked full time. I was home. We eventually had two kids. And we were doing this every weekend. And it grew and grew. We grew, we had a staff, we expanded our menu, but we were still doing the pop-up food, you know, thing. So it was wild and fun. And as you know, when you're doing something that inspires you, although you're physically working, it doesn't feel like work, right? Yeah. It's like dancing, you're expending energy, but it's nourishing you. And that's what it was like when we started. So, we moved out west, out here to Crescent City, which is a really small coastal town at the very tippy top of California, redwoods, rivers, ocean, no music festivals, little bitty town. So we kind of put that on the back burner. We always had the retirement plan. Retirement, I say that loosely because we're not at retirement age yet and never worked so hard in my life. But we always had the retirement plan to have a brick and mortar restaurant. It was a fantasy. You know, you think, what am I going to be doing in 20 years? So we started small here doing little events, nonprofit fundraisers, street fairs. And before we knew it, this dream location came up. Actually, one of the first restaurants we ate at when we landed in Crescent City in 2009, we said, wow, this would be the most amazing place. This would be it. This would be the pinnacle of our manifestation, you know, abilities. And March of 2020, that location came available. We said, holy smokes, can we really do this? Because we both worked full time, not owning a restaurant. But we had been doing our food business 17 years at this point, just here and there. You know, we know our food, we know our product, but owning a restaurant is a completely different deal. Yeah. So we took that heck yes attitude, quit our jobs to open a restaurant, and the rest is history. But, you know, while there was a lot of growing we had to do along the way in terms of being new restaurant owners, not to mention the COVID shutdown happened 2 days after we got the restaurant. Dude. So we learned
insanity.
It was insanity. And we learned we couldn't open our restaurant and it would have to be takeout only. So there was a lot of pivoting and things. But I think honestly, the reason that we are successful, we grew into our business, and I want to address that in a couple of ways. So, you know, we had been making our food and expanding and our repertoire of authentic Cajun and Creole cuisine. That's no problem. We know what to do there. Michael was, you know, a seasoned businessman from his 25 years in his industry running a business, not food related at all, but when it comes down to it, business is business, money is money, numbers are numbers. So if you know that, you can translate that anywhere. I was not a numbers person, but I had my own skill set that I had gained, you know, over my lifetime. And we took those elements and created our foundation. And when we weren't able to open our restaurant the way we had envisioned, which was as a restaurant because of COVID, and we had to pivot, we went back to our foundation. So, you know, we ended up, did I just say this, in our dream location.
Yeah.
Never ran an actual restaurant before. And we had to strip it way down because suddenly the world was turned on its head. How can we make this work? And we had to go back to our roots of takeout. So we had this beautiful restaurant with linen napkins and, you know, a beautiful staff and glassware and an amazing wine list and beer list. And we couldn't do anything with any of that. And there were, I honestly think, and this goes right into, you know, where we're going with this. We went back to our roots and we said, well, we know what does well takeout. We've done this for a long time.
Yeah.
We don't know how to plate clams and, you know, pasta with a Creole sauce in a takeout container, but we know what to do with jambalaya. We know what to do with our shrimp skewers because this is what we've always done. So we just went back to that.
Yeah.
And as the world started opening back up and restrictions were loosened, which took a year for us to get dine-in service, we slayed at the takeout. And I, you know, I'm not saying this from a place of competitiveness or anything, but there were other restaurants in our area that had to close for that entire amount of time because they're huge full service indoor dining restaurants and they couldn't do the takeout. It didn't work for them. You know, it wasn't feasible for them. Their menu wasn't a takeout menu. Their staff wasn't a takeout staff. Their facility wasn't a takeout facility. And that worked in our favor that we had already been that because that was our foundation.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so as our, yeah, as our business started to be able to look more like a full service restaurant, we were able to incrementally step into that. You know, when the COVID restrictions allowed indoor dining, there was, you know, you had to have like 3 miles between tables. No, but it was a lot of spacing. And we ended up having 6 tables in our restaurant, 6 tables. That's nothing. And so what that allowed was us to take the next step, grow into that. And then we had more tables and more tables. And so we built a really super solid foundation from where we had already been to where we are now. Yeah. But it happened incrementally. And in retrospect, Michael, if we had had this dream come true, where we got the keys to the restaurant, and we were opening, you know, days or weeks later, and we had opened at full capacity, we would have been so overwhelmed. It would not have been to our benefit.
Yeah.
It would have been to our detriment in terms of exhaustion and overwhelm. And although we did go through that, we were coming back to a place that we knew so well, which was just our food, our product, takeout, you know. If it hadn't been that way, life would look really different. And I don't know that we would have been able to scale to the level that we have with consistency, with confidence, with clarity, with ease, and those other, you know, metrics of success outside of money are vital for the longevity of a business.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, I think what I love the most about your story is first off the timing and the perfection of timing and how important it is to trust the timing of our lives, whether we believe in anything greater than ourselves or not. You know, there's no long-term benefit to you personally, your health, your mental health, your emotional health, in not adhering to this concept that there is a time and place for everything. And getting ready to sneeze. Oh my gosh. And I think what I love about your story as well is a couple different things that I see consistent in successful businesses and founders of successful businesses is one, consistency, and two, the ability to pivot. I would say three, actually, and that third one is the acceptance of incremental growth. I think that in our culture today, you know, whether it is personal development or growing a business, everybody wants to grow and be a seven-figure, nine-figure, 12-figure, 65-sold businesses tomorrow type of person. I'm guilty of it, right? I've been there as well. And over the years, and I still am continuing to understand the power of consistent incremental growth as opposed to, you know, immediate blitz scaling of your life or your company. Because what happens most of the time is when you're thrust into a new place that you haven't been before you have the ability to be comfortable with that inside of yourself, chances are you're going to screw it up for yourself, right? Because you don't know how to act. You don't know how to talk. You don't know how to be. You don't know how to walk. You know, you're not that person. So being there actually isn't really being there at all. It's somewhere else. And I think this is something that cannot be overstated with the world that we live in today, with everybody focused on making, you know, as massive of quantifiable leaps forward as possible, as quick as possible. That oftentimes, you know, the old the story about the turtle and the hare comes to mind. You know, at the end of the day, most of the time, the turtle's going to win, not because of the speed, but because of its consistency and its continuing to move no matter what. You know, I think the rabbit, I don't remember the whole story. The rabbit got like distracted, you know, a bunch of different things happened. It wasn't single-minded. It wasn't staying consistent with its goal, with its kind of destination. You know, and as a result, it got sidetracked and a bunch of different things happened and the turtle ended up winning. And I think it's really important for folks that are listening to this, including you and me, to continue to drive home in ourselves, you know, the fact that you may not be who you feel like you want to be right now, today, immediately, dominantly, 24/7. You know, it doesn't say anything about your fundamental sense of adequacy or worth. And in fact, I think that in our desperation to change, to get new things, to create, to manifest, whatever we're using here, we actually demonstrate a lower self-worth because we say, well, you know, I don't know, this doesn't happen immediately. Oh my gosh. As opposed to, man, look at this milestone. Boom, hit it. Milestone, boom, hit it. Milestone, boom, hit it. You know, that balance of looking how far you've come, recognizing how far there is to go, and not being in a hurry for either direction.
That's so important. And, you know, with that building comes confidence.
Yeah.
Right? When you see the incremental growth and you're moving, as you said, with single pointed focus in a single direction, gaining experience.
Yeah.
You cannot be masterful at something without experience. You can't. And I think that is one of the fallacies that sold and unfortunately purchased. Is you can get from here to here without experiencing it right? And without growing into it. And that's just baloney, because the all we are is our experiences.
Right.
And we don't draw on necessarily things we have read, you know, in times of crisis. We draw on what our experience was, right, and what got us through crisis. And that's our default mode. And you can be successful quickly through many different, you know, ways. But ultimately, what's going to happen in any business, in any point in life, whatever you're doing, there's going to be, you know, ups and downs. And what happens is, during the downs, whether it's a crisis or an unforeseen circumstance or whatever, we as a species default to habits. And until you've changed your habits, that default mechanism is going to be the same. And your habits don't change on mental knowledge. Our habits change on experience and embodying, in the true sense of the word, what new habits have I created for my body? That's what a habit is, you know. So until we go through the growth and the habituation of being that new person who has a different level of success, as I did previously, our default mechanism in times of stress or chaos or crisis, et cetera, are going to come back to our baseline. And our baseline, if we haven't lived it and grown from it, is going to be below our current level of success, which will mean our crash is going to be much greater. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Do you know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that, I mean, the example that comes to mind immediately is the lottery winner, right? 9 out of 10 lottery winners are not able to maintain their newly acquired wealth. And it's for the simple fact that they're not the people. They have not been able to, inside of themselves, tap into an energy or a mood where they are even remotely relating themselves to be somebody who can handle that money well, right? And a lot of that is due to the fact that, A, yes, most people in that position have never had to handle large sums of money, don't have any experience, you know, gauging, you know, really, really massive gaps of ROI, of wealth management. You know, I mean, it's like, you're, most of these people maybe, you know, make maybe top end that win the lottery, $200,000 a year, right? And you, but it doesn't matter. Even if it was $500,000 a year, going from that given to you annually, as opposed to getting, you know, a $65 million check, you just don't know what to do. And it's no fault of your own. And I think this is another thing too, that happens in the personal development industry, is there's this unconscious shame for folks who can't just seem to get it right. And this is in personal development. This is in business consulting, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's not as cool to grow slow, but it's like, man, you know, you look at the statistics, you place it down, 99% of the businesses that grow, and I think this applies to everything we're talking about, because this also applies to personal growth. You know, a business that goes from $0 to $1 million in 3 months is probably going to go from $1 million to zero in 3 months. You know, a business that takes 17 years to hit $100,000 in a month is most likely built a crap ton of rapport, relationships, credibility, authority, a massive Rolodex of experiences, people, and milestones that will live. I mean, you want to talk, because, and this is where I think you really talk about legacy-driven business, which is a big part of what we're doing here. You know, in the shiny object world of careers and personal development, we get so horny about shiny objects and numbers, like, oh, you did this much in your business. And it's like, you know what? I've met a ton of people. I know a ton of people who actively do 6 figures plus a month in their business. Some of them are just assholes and miserable. And, you know, maybe a few of them are actually nice and are above water, you know, let alone actually on a ski board, you know, and not just treading, you know? And so I think that for those who are listening here, you know, if you're recognize, if you're like us, if you're like me, if you're like Jen, and you know you want to be something and you know you want to do something, but you not finding yourself there yet, I think it's really important that first off, you give yourself a little bit of grace and take some time to look back at how much you've already done and how much you've built up until this point, but also understand that, and this is something that, again, I think both of us are integrating every day,
that, you know, and, you know, that quote comes to mind, overnight success is the byproduct of years of hard work. And maybe that would be paraphrased, but I think it's true, right? Because success, just like any other ROI in life, whether positive or negative, tends to occur like a snowball, you know, and it starts small and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, whether it's on the positive or the negative side of things. And, you know, there's something to be said about that, because you're not running at the same speed as, you know, I don't know, Oprah or Steve Harvey, right? Or somebody of that nature. It's like we all have our own paths. And I think social media does a really good job, especially when it comes, you know, it's so interesting. Social media, its whole purpose is to connect us with the things that we like and we're fond of. And yet, when there is a fundamental inability in us to look at ourselves as somebody that can enjoy these things that we're seeing other people enjoy, that's where this sense of just regret and bitterness and hatred and jealousy and envy and all these things just come to play, because we're watching all these people that seem to have their life together, which most of them don't, you know? And it's like, man, if I could just focus on me, be okay with slow and steady growth, I think I'll be okay. You know, I think I'll be okay. And I think in the long run, I also think that, you know, we talk about when you die, you're going to look back on your life and, you know, when you're on your deathbed, blah, 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 blah. And even still looking those, you know, looking at the 29 now, right? The 40-year-old Michael, the 60-year-old Michael, looking hypothetically back through my life, you know, I mean, sure, it'd be cool to have a couple of different things that I maybe spent a couple of years of pop growing and exploding. But, you know, honestly, it also feels really amazing to build an organization like Bob Proctor or, you know, maybe even Tony Robbins that has been around for 20, 30 years consistently and didn't necessarily I think both those organizations, you know, you could probably say in their infancies, were not obsessed with scaling to the moon tomorrow, right? They're obsessed with helping people. And I also think that we can talk about that a little bit, you know, values as it relates to aspiring success, right? Values as it relates to aspiring success. So gosh, there's so much we can go on. Do you have any thoughts on that?
A lot, so many thoughts. You know, the first thing that popped in when you mentioned like Bob Proctor, he built a legacy, yeah. Right? And so what is a legacy and what are we wanting to create? We collectively, you know, if we look at our life purpose, if we look at the work we do, if we look at the fact that is it service-based, and service has a different definition, not definition, but perspective. I think everybody in every position, you know, in this country globally, but is in service to someone else because we're a collective society. So no matter what you're doing, it's in service. But in terms of building a business quickly, you can't create a legacy, again, if you haven't built a foundation, if you're not coming from a place of just absolute integrity rather than desperation. You know, tying this back to like the lottery winners, I think a lot of people are in that position. Who's buying lottery tickets? There's usually a place of desperation there. Who is honestly buying into, I need to buy this program or, you know, do this thing so that I can build a six-figure business tomorrow? That's not somebody who is service-based, mission-based, looking to build a legacy. This is someone who is coming out of a place of desperation. And I don't say that from a place of judgment at all. I say it honestly from a place of identity, yeah. Right? I've been there. Like my life, not right now, but in my life, I could have said, my life sucks and money would solve this problem.
Yeah.
And how can I have a different life tomorrow? Well, the bottom line is you can't if you haven't done, you know, that incremental growth, because you're not going to be a different person tomorrow. Yeah. So you'll build this six-figure income in 90 days because you followed this, you know, business guru or whatever.
Yeah.
But the ability to build a legacy like Tony Robbins or, you know, any name that you mentioned that is truly serving humanity, that is truly an extension of yourself rather than just some copy-paste thing that you bought into. Yeah. is not going to have long-term success.
Yeah. I agree. And I think a lot of this too, it does have to do with our own internal agency. You know, I think that, yeah, if you're looking to build a business for the money, you should probably stop and go into sales. Honestly, you know, if you're just doing business for the money, you're probably not equipped to do everything that your business needs you to be and do to do it successfully, get the money. And then ultimately, right, and we've talked about this for years, go into the reasons as to why you want the money, right? Because then we go into our the whole nature of desire and understanding that it's not about the things we want. It's about the feelings that we think we're going to get when the things happen. And that's one thing that people have a common misconception about, especially as it relates to money, is, you know, the whole, well, money will solve the problem. No, money will not solve the problem. You know, money inherently in and of itself is a tool. And if you don't know how to use tools, you're probably going to use it wrong. And, you know, that's just the reality of probability. Money is not as simple as a hammer. It's not as complex as, you know, trigonometry, but it requires experience, understanding, wisdom, knowledge, all the good stuff in order to use it as a tool in a way that actually, you know, supports and grows. Because I think what you also have to look at here is a lot of people, and I think we talked about this in our last episode, just around the globe are in constant states of fight or flight, right? And I think this comes to, you know, the multitudes of factors that we don't need to get into. But, you know, ultimately, when it comes to trying to change from that place, trying to grow from that place of fight or flight, it's like, I look at this, when I look at the growth that comes from steady, solid, integrity, value-driven movement and action, I see thick blocks of gold just setting themselves under your feet. And when this, all of this action comes from a place of desperation and I need, I see us just setting up very, very fragile glass cubes below our feet that at any moment are at risk of falling through. And I think it's something that we don't calculate a lot. And I think in a lot of ways too, this contributes to a lot of unnecessary failure. I mean, I guess in the long term, it's necessary because it shows us wisdom that we learn. But this whole, like, you know, if we just stop trying to grow so fast and just kind of hit said, hey, you know, let me just trust the timing of my life and balance that out with taking action and executing on what you know needs to be done, we'd probably find ourselves generally a lot more happy. But I think, again, so many factors to play in here, not trusting yourself, not trusting your life, not trusting how things are going for you, not trusting how what you're enduring now or dealing with now, you know, is going to play into what you're going to be going through in the future, how you'll approach the future. It's like, and then on top of that, how much are we preventing ourselves from truly growing by simply being obsessed with growing? You know, like, there's nothing wrong with that. I love it. You know, personal development junkie. But I think some of the times we do too much. We do too much because we're actually more obsessed with the concept of growing than we are with actually measuring steady, consistent, incremental growth. You know, because the growth process itself, it can be addicting. When you feel yourself making progress in an area, you're like, oh shit, like this feels really good. You get a high off of recognizing that you're growing. And I think that what happens in our industry in the segment of personal development is we get so obsessed with the need to grow and the growth that comes with growing that we just don't sit down trying to modify my language here. And just, again, go back to that place of acceptance, right? I think we just find so much more there, so much more.
Yeah, I agree with that fully. And, you know, part of that too, from a self-proclaimed personal development junkie. I mean, I spend time every single day on my personal growth to the point where I have to stop myself so I can get on with my day, right? And do the things I need to do. But the implementation of it sometimes gets lost.
Yeah.
The practice, and that's why a practice is so important, whatever it is you're practicing, to make time for that, for the implementation, for the reflection, for the being instead of constantly doing. And growth, as we've talked about a couple of times, happens on many levels. And if we're constantly chasing and not allowing, then we don't get the experience of the growth. We don't get the wisdom. We don't get the embodiment of it. And those things are vital to be able to, you know, to live it, not just know it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's so much literature about understanding how our internal states, you know, reflect our external states. And I think that it's really, really important if you're invested in your growth, that you really take full agency of the fact that, yeah, you have to be there internally before you are externally. And fundamentally, when I find myself in a place of unsatisfaction externally in my life, in my job, my career, my relationships, it does start inside. You know, I have to change my own perspective before my world changes. Always, you know, the perspective has to change, because when the perspective changes, everything else changes as a result, right? Not because it actually is moved, but because I'm looking at myself differently. And as a result, I'm looking at the situation differently. And it's so interesting how, you know, you mentioned chasing versus allowing. I think that's a really good subject for next week's podcast. So what I want to do is wrap it up here, and we're going to ask you the $1 million question. Okay. For anybody who's in the middle of a stage of incremental growth that they're not feeling satisfied with, that they're, you know, feeling that they should be somewhere that they're not, any of those common feelings that come with becoming who you want to be, what is the single most potent piece of advice that you give that person, Jen?
Oh, the single most important piece of advice for the person who feels like they're not yet who they want to become. Yeah, I think the advice I would give would be to recognize what you've already become. Really sit with that. And as you said earlier, look at everything that's brought you to this moment. And recognize the depth and the breadth and the value there. And that you're so much closer to who you want to be and what you want to be than you think you are.
Awesome. Absolutely.
And usually... Yeah. And I would just add to that, you know, my background is in naturopathy and holistic wellness and stuff. And one of the questions there is, you already know what it is that you need to do, you know? So in terms of physical health, it would be everybody already knows what they need to do. So if we're applying this to the question you just asked, so looking at where you're already at, recognizing you're so much closer to where you want to be than you realize, because you're focused on not being there yet, rather than where you are. So to return your focus to that. And then I would ask, what is the thing that you need to change? Because I can not guarantee, but I can almost guarantee almost everyone is going to know that answer of the thing that's preventing them from getting from here to there. And to know that it's so much closer than you think it is.
I love it. I love how that leads into our chasing versus allowing. And that also leads into one of the principles at the Limitless Day Reality Hacker that we're going to dive into next week, ultimately called what we call the field. And we're going to be diving a bit into the limitless nature of human awareness and ultimately understanding that you're not only closer than you were yesterday to who and what you want to be, but you in fact already are it. That being said, we're going to wrap this up. Jen, our conversations are like stars traveling through space, meeting at different points in time, and leading to lots of awesome discoveries. I'm super grateful for our opportunity to share here.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate
you. Awesome. And if you're listening, we appreciate you. If you need anything, go ahead and reach out to us. We're available on socials via email. Go ahead and join our Limitless 5-day challenge. Really exciting. Make sure to check out our Limitless retreat going on this weekend, August 19th, 20th, and 21st, online at my house in Colorado. Couldn't be more excited for that. But that being said, I hope you have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for joining the Limitless Life podcast. I am your host, Michael Gustin. I couldn't have been more glad to spend this time with you today.
Next steps, if you're feeling frisky, is to join our 5-day challenge. You can find that in the links of our podcast. You can also find that on our Instagram at instagram.com/realityhackerco. There you'll find access to our challenge, as well as how you can get private one-on-one limitless coaching, along with learning more about all of our online retreats, our live events, and everything else that we have to offer. Thanks again for listening. I'm Michael. Talk to you soon.